Please go ahead.
Good morning. May it please the court. Richard Lechick on behalf of the appellant, Randolph Clark L.
Good morning.
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes.
Okay.
Article 1, Section 21 of the Washington Constitution provides that the right to trial by jury shall remain inviolate. Under this provision, the responsibility for determining whether the state has met its burden to prove all the elements of the defense is assigned to the jury, not judges. For this reason, the mission of an element in a to-convict instruction is necessarily always prejudicial. In this case, Mr. Clark L. was charged and punished for delivering a controlled substance, methamphetamine. However,
your premise that it can never be harmless, doesn't that contradict with the authority that adopts the Nieder test from the United States Supreme Court?
It does contradict Nieder. However, the Washington Supreme Court in the Brown case did not discuss or interpret Article 1, Section 21, the Washington jury right. So my argument is that the Washington Constitution demands a different test from the Nieder test, which
and are you saying that that particular issue has not been addressed in any precedent-setting case?
That is my argument, yes. And I think the Brown case doesn't discuss Article 1, Section 21. It doesn't say the parties provided a gun wall briefing of the issue, so I think the issue still remains open.
Why would the Brown case have to discuss anything then? I mean, why, if they're only applying the United States Constitution, wouldn't they be bound to follow Nieder?
They would be bound to follow Nieder,
without
however,
having to say, okay, we're going to follow this in Washington. They just would.
Well, I think the court would have at least discussed the provision rather just flippantly saying we're going to follow Nieder.
Your argument goes into each and every argument that was made in the Seibert case. And
correct.
I believe that your position is more or less equivalent to the position taken by Justice Sanders in his dissent in that case.
It's largely consistent with that.
Section 21?
He did discuss that provision.
And yet, none of the other justices went for it.
Well,
isn't that a pretty good indication that we're not following that line of thinking?
Well, that whole opinion is non-precedential because it was a plurality opinion, and the plurality didn't reach that issue because they found there was no error under the to-convict instruction, so they had no need to discuss whether.
Yes, but the plurality and everybody but Justice Sanders agreed that the conviction could be affirmed, notwithstanding his argument that it violated the Washington State Constitution.
That, I think, is correct. However, they didn't advance the argument I'm making, and the opinion simply isn't controlling, so I don't think you can combine the different opinions to reach a holding that's binding on this court. And I've cited an opinion that states that when there's a plurality opinion and there's not a
we're
majority.
Aware of how that works, but what authority would you rely on? Is there any other authority that discusses the special meaning of the jury trial right under the Washington Constitution?
Yes, and the primary case I would direct Your Honor to is the William Walker's opinion. In that case, is largely the logic of that opinion is largely consistent with my argument, except they apply it in the context of when the jury to an aggravating factor that wasn't properly submitted to the jury.
The jury didn't make a finding. I mean, that's the difference between weapon and firearm.
Yes, and in this case, the jury didn't make a finding as to the identity of the substance. They found that it was a controlled substance, but they didn't find what it was. And in that case, the jury found, well, just despite all the evidence, the only evidence was that it was a firearm, they just found that it was a deadly weapon. And the Supreme Court said, well, despite the fact that he was charged with a firearm enhancement, despite the fact that, well, the only evidence was that this was a firearm, the jury only found that this was a deadly weapon, and
this all went
the jury
to the
right
sentence. So, I mean, your argument has support with regard to the fact that the jury's verdict didn't authorize the sentence. But I'm talking about what case would you rely on, or maybe it's the same line of cases, but it's just that it's never been applied to a conviction.
It's the same line of cases.
Say that we don't have harmless error. I mean, it seems to me that since Brown, we haven't had any case that goes into the jury trial right in that respect.
Not specifically in that context, but I think if you look at the logic of the Williams-Walker opinion, I mean, the
didn't Williams-Walker follow federal precedent? It was following a U.S. Supreme Court decision. It wasn't an independent construction of the Washington Constitution.
Respectfully, I think Your Honor is incorrect on that point. I think that opinion, what they were responding to is the United States Supreme Court said that it can be harmless error, you know, consistent with the Nieder line of case, that it can be harmless error if the aggravating factor is not submitted to the jury. And the Washington Supreme Court held, well, actually, it's always harmless error under the jury trial right under the Washington Constitution.
Well, what, if you can sort of succinctly summarize it, getting right back to the question that you would address in a gun law analysis, what is it specifically about the Washington's Constitution language that makes you think that our Supreme Court would construe it in a way different from the United States Supreme Court with respect to harmless error on elements?
Well, first point is the unique language, which is in the jury right shall remain inviolate, which is different from the Sixth Amendment. The Supreme Court also retains the discretion to interpret its provision differently from the Supreme Court. And I think they would look at the history of the jury trial right and the history of precedent prior to the Nieder case that traditionally held that omission of an element from jury instructions is necessarily prejudicial, never harmless. And I think you can look at the Justice Scalia's dissent in Nieder, and you can look at, I've cited two other states who have rejected the Nieder line. It's Mississippi and New Hampshire. And they've independently interpreted their state constitution to not follow Nieder. So that's, I think, how the Washington Supreme Court
would
look at it.
You have your rebuttal time remaining.
Good morning. Kimberly Talene on behalf of Whatcom County for the state of Washington. I guess a little bit surprised in terms of the focus of the argument today, because it is clear in the state of Washington, in State versus Brown as well, really in the plurality decision of Seibert, that at this point in time, the state of the law in the state of Washington is that harmless error is something that this court can look at and use in analyzing a case such as this.
Well, one would think so, perhaps on a practical level, but I believe that counsel's point is that is there a case that says in so many words that is actually signed by at least five justices that goes into a gun law analysis with respect to whether under the Washington Constitution we would use the Nieder test?
There isn't currently.
So that's the point.
And that is the point, except that this court is bound by the state Supreme Court, and the state Supreme Court has implicitly in Seibert, even though it's a plurality decision, the majority of the court accepted, including three of the dissenters, that harmless error analysis could be applied in the setting of an allegation where there's an omission from the essential elements within the two convict instructions.
Well, they said that, but did they say that, and this is also true under Article 1, so I forget the number, but
Article 1, I think Section
21.
Yeah. They did not. And, with all, I respectfully, if the court is wanting to reach that issue, I would ask for the opportunity to respond. I stand on my brief, but my brief did not go into a gun law analysis, frankly, because, with State versus Brown and that analysis being consistently used throughout the state of Washington, as well as implicitly used in Seibert, even though it's not a majority that went into Article 1, Section 21, or Article 1, Section 21 of the Washington State Constitution. So,
okay, well, we understand that.
Yeah.
I think in terms of your argument, in terms of what you're advocating here
yes.
today, I think the difficulty that you face is with the sentence. Because
yes.
If harmless error is applied, then the conviction under at least seven or eight justices would stand, but
But the sentence.
Seibert doesn't help you out too much with these sentences because you only have four judges.
Correct. Seibert doesn't. And therein lies the difficulty with the plurality decision because, you know, this, my position, the state's position, is that there was no omission of the essential element, the listing of a controlled substance and the fact that a controlled substance was defined as methamphetamine, that when you logically look at that as a reasonable juror would, the jury is finding in order to convict that he had delivered a controlled substance of methamphetamine.
So how would you distinguish Williams Walker, where the only weapon was a gun, but finding of a weapon was insufficient to establish firearm for sentencing purposes?
Because the definition, I believe, and it's been a while since I've taken a look at Williams Walker, but the definitions were referring to you had a conflict in the evidence from the instructions that were before the jury. And so the instructions did not define accurately what the actual evidence was. And so there was no, in the finding of the jury and finding them guilty, they could not then impose that sentence that was predicated on something else entirely.
But your argument here seems to be relying on somehow the logic of the four justices in Seibert who thought that the charging document was incorporated into the jury instructions. And actually, I guess it said as charged. That isn't true here. And then you have the rest of the court taking some pains to point out that the jury didn't know what was charged. And so this whole idea of incorporation or embodiment, I think is your word, is a little bit hard to follow. It's really kind of a stretch in terms of the way we usually look at what a jury knows what it's doing.
Well, I think, you know,
kind of metaphysical or even beyond that.
Well, I don't think it's that metaphysical. I mean, it's right there in front of the jury. The jury is being told.
The word methamphetamine is not in front of the jury.
The word methamphetamine is in front of the jury, not in the to convict instruction. But they are told that a controlled substance, in this case, they were not told a controlled substance is methamphetamine, heroin, marijuana. What they were told was.
Right, but they didn't find that he was guilty of delivering methamphetamine. I mean, that's not in the verdict, is it?
You know, I actually, now that the court said that, in terms of the verdict form itself, I would have to look at it. But, you know, if I would have to look at that. I can't answer that off the top of my head. But
okay. Well, because it's not in the to convict instruction.
It doesn't necessarily mean it's not in the verdict form. So that would be.
Well, where else would it be, it's not in the to convict instruction? There is, I guess, a definition of methamphetamine.
And at the beginning
But there's nothing that tells the jury that in order to convict the guy of what he's charged with, you have to find that he delivered methamphetamine.
The verdict form here says controlled substance. It does not say methamphetamine.
Yeah. So the verdict. So yes, you're right. The finding explicitly, if you're going to look explicitly at what the jury found, did not find.
And so the test that we used is that you cannot have a sentence that is not authorized by the jury's verdict. So if you set the jury's verdict up and look at it, it says you can impose a sentence for delivery of a controlled substance.
Which means that you would then have to look at the sentence of the going down to the just a basic controlled substance, which I think would adjust the sentence in this particular case.
That would be the remedy, would it not, if counsel was correct about the sentence argument?
The sentence argument the state is conceding, that is difficult in this case unless you're going to follow my logic with respect to looking at the jury instructions as a whole and that the jury implicitly found that it was methamphetamine because that was the only drug that was discussed.
I'm not aware of any other appellate case that has followed that particular aspect of Seibert, even in an unpublished opinion.
No, I'm not either.
So it doesn't seem like it's a real strong, enduring analysis, does it?
I'm here.
Okay. So, I mean, it would seem that it would be advisable to always include the name of the controlled substance.
Yes, and I think, and sometimes when we get a newer deputy up or a deputy who hasn't been doing drug cases, Seibert was a 2010 case. This should not be happening currently. So the state does agree with that. However, I would strongly ask the court to affirm the conviction and to find that under Seibert, that is the controlling case, that the harmless error analysis is available to this court when there is an alleged omission in a to convict instruction. And unless the court has further questions, I will step down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess I'll just focus a little bit on the actual error in the state's argument as to that. I mean, the state didn't raise its argument that the error was forfeited. I think it's clear that the invited error doctrine doesn't apply in this case because Mr. Clark Gale just simply didn't object to the instruction. The state says there is no error, but the Seibert case is not controlling precedent. In any event, it's materially distinguishable because it doesn't have the as charged language in the jury instructions. So I think it's plain that the jury simply didn't find that the substance Mr. Clark L. delivered was methamphetamine. They only found that he delivered a controlled substance. So the question is, what test do we apply as to that error? And the Washington Constitution enshrines the trial by jury and that it shall remain inviolate. And what that means is that juries get to decide, did the state, you know, prove that Mr. Clark L., that the substance was methamphetamine. It's a violation of that right for judges, respectfully such as your honors, to decide, well, the jury would have found it anyways. That's not appropriate because to do so really diminishes the jury right. And this really is the logic of the cases in the Williams-Walker, although they apply it in a different context. I mean, the point is that the jury has to find every fact to just, you know, all the elements and any element that increases punishment. That's the point. The jury has to find all that. And when the jury is not asked to find either the elements or necessary aggravating element, necessarily the error can't be harmless because the jury hasn't been asked to decide if the state's met its burden as to that fact. So this court should hold under the Washington Constitution that the jury by trial right means that the Nieder test doesn't apply and that the error is necessarily prejudicial and should reverse Mr. Clark Gale's conviction and remand for a new trial. Alternatively, I think the precedent is pretty clear that because the jury didn't find that this was methamphetamine, the court was not authorized to punish Mr. Clark Gale as if this substance was methamphetamine. So the remedy there would be reversal and remand for entry of punishment consistent with what the jury found. So I'd ask that this court first reverse Mr. Clark Gale's conviction or alternatively remand for resentencing.
Thank you very much.